The following is a Mediocre Movie Club production.
Welcome back to the Mediocre Movie Club podcast. I'm John Kissel, and with me tonight is Brian Hartman.
That's me.
And Shane Settner.
Yo.
So those hardcore listeners of the MMC podcast might remember that last year at around this time, we did a Silicon Veep series in which we discussed the respective seasons of Silicon Valley and Veep on HBO. This year, we are a little less productive, a little less on the ball, a little less giving a shit about the MMC. I hate to talk shit about, you know, our own creation that I was just so recently in utter control of, but you got to call a spade when your output is lagging. So this year, in that spirit of less, we are just going to do a season recap of Silicon Valley and Barium, what we're calling Barium Valley, because Silicon is an element and Barium is an element, and Barium sounds a lot like Barry. Solid gag, I think.
I mean, I didn't think you needed to explain all of it.
I think I did, because people didn't pay enough attention to the Breaking Bad credits.
And, I guess.
You know, they didn't catch all those element symbols. They probably just felt like they're boxing a capital letter and a small letter for no reason whatsoever. So Brian did not see any of Barry. Is that correct?
No, it's next on the queue.
Okay. So we're going to have Brian for our discussion of Silicon Valley, the fifth season, which again ended on Sunday. I don't have a sense of how long this show is going to go. I feel like they are approaching the end. I can't really gauge if it's going to be an optimistic or a pessimistic series. Coming from Mike Judge, who did Office Space and King of the Hill, I think he is an optimistic person in a small C conservative way. Like, he believes in families and small units, but when you get giant operations and organizations, he's fundamentally pessimistic. So I don't know. You guys want to speculate about the ending of Silicon Valley based on this latest season, in which Pied Piper experienced some pretty massive success and may very well find themselves in the opening credits for next season, having now opened up a giant office space and generating the revenue that must go with that kind of thing?
I think, like, it could go on forever as they're just mimicking what is happening in Silicon Valley in real life. Like, there's no real reason for it to stop if they sort of pivot to new ideas. Like, the big one for me was the ICO. I didn't know an initial coin offering was a thing.
Mm-hmm. Neither did I.
I pretty much knew most of the rest of the show as a tech junkie.
Sure.
I was a little bit disappointed in how happy it ended. It seemed very strange given the rest of the season. So I am honestly clueless as to what's going to happen in season whatever's next, six.
Yes. Six? And there's no, they're like, Veep is ending. I think they've got 1 year on Silicon Valley, so that'll be the seventh season for Veep. But there's no news as far as Silicon Valley ending. And they have been renewed for a sixth season as well as Barry. So it'll go on. The format of the season has always, or of the series, has always been putting out small fires after small fire after small fire. And very often those fires are have the potential to burn out the entire business. So as the business gets bigger, it therefore becomes less risky because there's more money involved and there's more incentive to keep it from collapsing, where that's not the case if it's only worth, you know, like a handful of million. So if you remove the threat of bankruptcy and the business going away, it might be more difficult to generate the kind of attention that I think Silicon Valley is often really good at, despite, you know, it being a comedy. So yeah, I feel like its days are numbered. Like, they've already had one cast member leave in T.J. Miller, who played Ehrlich, because ostensibly he wanted to do bigger things and he was feeling boxed in.
And,
I mean, on the one hand, that is always a concern with shows that go on for a long time. On the other hand, the show may have scared the other actors from wanting to do such a thing in how despicably it treated the character of Ehrlich. I don't say that as a negative.
Well, I don't.
I say that as a positive, and how brazen such a send-off was.
I want to get back to D.J. Miller, but sure. I do want to say, so before we move on to that, I just want to say, chime in about the end of the series. It is an open-ended, so it's not, they originally said he wanted to do six seasons. And they signed something, and it's still open. It could be more than six seasons at this point.
I mean, I was looking at the Wikipedia page to just do a quick catch up on some of the larger events from the season, and there are also the ratings associated with each episode. It's like 600,000, 700,000 per episode, so it does not have a huge audience. I think it's well and good for HBO to keep a series around if it's like culturally significant with a small audience. However, you know, if you have to renegotiate contracts, that might be too far for them.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I can see it's being wrapped up next year. I can see it going 2 years.
Yeah.
Max.
Yeah. I think more years. And they experienced a good chunk of success this year. I'm sure there's plenty of comedy to be mined from the difference between a micro nano cap company to something larger than that. Like in that operating in that field. So it's, I don't doubt that it's still going to be a funny show. It's just like plot wise, I just worry that they're running out of
room. What would you say? You always say you're going to put your nickel down. I'm going to put my nickel down on them going public in the near future. That seems like the next thing for them to do.
Yeah, I think that's good and reasonable. And there would be I think this season more than, and we can get into the meat of the season now, but I do feel like this season really took a knife to the state of big tech as it exists currently. And I'm sure Ryan can speak to this in more expertise, and to your future nickel dropping. An initial public offering would be like a great way to bring in Wall Street and take the knife to them as well.
Right.
So, Brian,
or I don't know, who is it? Just went public. Spotify went public without using the big initial public offering companies. Maybe they'll try to mock Spotify in some way. I don't know what they're going to do. Maybe their coin will do something along the lines of Bitcoin, and they'll just be crazy rich or ride that roller coaster.
Dinesh just has a fleet of Teslas.
So, wanted to get back to TJ Miller.
Sure.
Was he missed this year for you guys?
I don't think so.
None at all.
I think the difference between an eight... Well, I mean, the series started with only 8 episodes a season, give or take, and then it ballooned out to 10, which, you know, isn't such a larger amount, before switching back to 8 this season. And I feel like the difference in those, in that 2-episode order, was about the total amount of screen time that you would give to TJ Miller. So if that character doesn't work for you, then great. I don't think the show really lost anything.
I feel like TJ's character, or like, was more of like an agent of chaos. And I feel like we had Jin Yang take his place in some of that, which I'm fine with. I love Jin Yang.
Yeah, I wanted more scenes of Jin Yang in China. Like, I feel like they could have done a lot more with him there.
Yeah, the whole period of time between when he leaves and when we see him again, like an episode or two later, after he's assembled a workforce and got office space and has had some amount of success, that is, all that is elided in favor of Gavin just knocking on his door, and you get the surprise of Jin Yang opening it. So whether or not...
And then Jin Yang,
that's probably, I'm sure that's something too.
That acts like he doesn't know who he is, man. That's great. Yeah. That's great. Good character development for Jin Yang this season.
As far as TJ Miller, I mean, we left him as an opium addict somewhere in the Himalayas, and we leave him really, as far as, I don't think his name is ever going to come up again. We leave him as a court-recognized bucket of ashes.
Pig ashes.
Which is actually a pig, and everyone knows it's not real, but no one gives a shit, and it's not going to come up again. It would come up again if Jin Yang was around, but he's in China. Well, I guess he's coming back, but...
You say
his name will never be muttered. I'll put my nickel down and say his name will never be uttered again on the show.
That's fine. And you say, by the way, he did not leave on good terms. I don't think it was his choice to leave. What everyone said was he was awful to deal with. He showed up late. Everyone had to wait on him all the time. He thought he was too cool for school. That's after his interview. Everyone responded to him saying, yeah, this guy's bullshit.
And without like commenting on the veracity of the accusations against him, of the like harassment and I want to say even assault allegations against him, by a woman that he knew in college. I'm sure HBO was just breathing a sigh of relief that that came out after he was let go. And he may very well have been let go when that came out either, if he was difficult to work with and had a bad relationship with everyone, even without knowing whether it's true or not. But I don't really want to talk about that.
Yeah, that's enough TJ Miller gossip.
Yeah, I think so. So the satire in this season, I think at the top of the list is Amazon and their current flirting with every major U.S. city about where they're going to put their HQ to, and just how much of a giveaway these various cities are going to give to Amazon for the great privilege of letting them operate at deep discount in their cities.
Where did this come up?
It's Hooli when they go to North Carolina, where the mayor is like, we'll give you everything, we'll cut essential services, whatever you want. The whole dynamic is one.
I don't think that's Amazon specific, because it's Wisconsin that just signed a deal with the Chinese parts maker and gave them billions of dollars in tax credits.
Okay.
For 1,000 jobs or something.
Okay. I mean, being it's in Atlanta, Amazon, where it's like, sure. Yeah. That's certainly not restricted to Amazon. Amazon is just the highest profile. And especially living in Atlanta, where we're just waiting on tenterhooks to see if they're, whether or not they're going to build HQ2 here.
How about the Southeast side?
As
a new homeowner,
as I said to Blair, I will be pissed off every day my property increases until it's time to sell. So that will hopefully not be for a long time. So, I mean, I'm prepared to be just a little irritated every year that my taxes go up, my property taxes, until I'm ready to cash out. So Amazon building on the Southeast side, it would probably get like some neighbors to mow their lawns a little more, but I just think about all those taxes I would have to pay. So no, thank you. I don't want that.
But what,
as a homeowner for less than a week, I feel like I have, I'm entitled to have a serious opinion about this kind of thing.
And, do you even know how much you pay in property taxes for a year?
No idea. There's
okay,
like,
good. Just making sure we're on the same page.
I would give it like 25% in either direction. I have a number in my head.
Watching John go through this and the frustration of not knowing what any numbers are and trying to make sense of it all is pretty illuminating on the entire home buying process, because what the fuck is going on when you buy a home? Like, No idea. No fucking idea.
I think I could be within 1% of how much I pay in property taxes.
Oh, and I'll get to that place absolutely, because I am a person who keeps track of
it. Well, they'll send it to you on a piece of paper as well.
Yes, but as the years go on, I'll be able to anticipate. Now I have no idea, and it'll be a giant hole in my budget until I get that letter.
Well, you pay it every month with your mortgage.
You do not. Unless you're a fucking idiot, because that's your money and the bank isn't doing anything with it except holding it in an account.
No, sometimes you have to get a loan unless you have a certain amount.
I did not have that problem.
That's good.
Wow.
Oh, look at you.
He did pay for the home. He did pay for the down payment in gold bricks.
Yes.
And
I being in Atlanta, I did them like in the club, stripper style. And I broke some people's teeth by cleaning gold bricks out of my hand.
Yeah,
it was only like 3 gold bricks, but I mean,
which works for me, because
gold bricks. And
one of the injuries was to your real estate agent, who has now signed up for a work comp case. So thank you for doing that.
One hand feeds the other.
That's right.
So that's Amazon with its corporate vulture-y and every other company, as you're correct to say, Brian. But I have no doubt that Amazon specifically was on the writers' minds when they were mapping out this season. What else you got as far as real world satire?
A bar of gold is worth $517,200.
Well, are you telling me that I got ripped off? Because I don't really want to hear that, having only been in the house for a few days. I mean, I'm sleeping there for the first time tonight, and now you're telling me that I overpaid by $1 million.
Speaking of homes, though, you know, when they all got kicked out of the house, I thought that was actually a next smart step. But now they're all back in the house again, and that doesn't seem to make any sense.
I don't remember how that played out. I feel like
where did they go?
Somewhere.
Well, it's because Jin Yang kicked everyone out. Although they really like for a show that is pretty good on their tenant laws and stuff, like the laws and stuff like that, very detailed. I don't think you just kick someone out. Yeah. They did let that one fly, especially in California.
That was the whole thing.
So, Jared. Yeah, and oh yeah, that is a little inconsistent with Jared too. Yeah, and Jin Yang in the past were like, we can't kick him out.
I did convince Chelsea that Jared is easily the best character in this show.
Oh,
there were countless times of me laughing out loud at him. I mean, the most memorable, because it's the most recent, is where they're at the camping area. I forget what festival that is, the dirt festival, I'll call it. And he just like screams out at the guy about how he's going to murder him.
You want to die today, motherfucker?
But it was Kennedy, motherfucker, which was, again. We'll return to the real world stuff because I do very much want to talk about that. But praise for Zach Woods as shared. Never in short supply. There can always be more of it. He was great last season with his Ed Chambers stuff. I kind of feel like they didn't give him as much as in previous seasons. Maybe he was also hurt by the shortened episode order. But it's not like he becomes less funny just because he's on screen less. Like, everything with him as CFO, I don't really feel like anything came. He didn't, like, make any big decisions or anything as CFO or take any extra responsibility that we didn't assume he was already doing in the first place.
I think we could have gone on for, like, a whole episode of him hazing the intern. Like, the intern obviously is mentally scarred from Jared, but we don't necessarily know too much about it other than maybe a scene or two.
Yeah, that's a good point. I would like to have seen more of that. Jared's one of those guys who I feel like it kind of is like the less is more. Like a whole Jared-centric episode, unless we're delving into his childhood or something, which I'd be fine with.
I strongly disagree with that. I much prefer where he almost certainly is improvising every very strange little detail.
Yeah, I just think it would be too much if he's really taken up 75% of screen time.
And I don't think he needs to, but like a dedicated B plot instead of Guilfoyle or Dinesh every like. And Kumail Nanjiani is an Oscar nominated screenwriter, so his time or his screen time, even though he's still a supporting character, you know, he's going to get as much as he would like, I would imagine, while remaining within like the orbit of his character on the show.
So I've been going back and watching season one, and I forgot how involved Jared was in season one, actually. That he was more in there than I remember the first time. I kind of thought he like came strong at the end, but yeah, he was in there the whole time.
Like, off the top of my head, all of his scene, not all, but most of his scenes this year were him with the group. Whereas, like, in season one, he does the whole market research outside of the big seminar where by market research, all I mean is just sticking his head into random passerby's windows and making some very creepy suggestion as to what Pied Piper could offer in service. Something about watching their children 24/7 or something like that. And I don't really think that he had any of those kind of scenes this year. But to broaden the scope, 100%, he's the best character on the show.
Agreed. I mean, Guilfoyle, it's him and Guilfoyle for me.
Absolutely. I think he's way above everyone else.
I got Lori's right up there too. Like she's a great character.
I think her character is easy to play though. I don't necessarily think she's doing a lot of work there.
I don't think
that playing a playing an antisocial person is really that difficult.
But there was the next to last episode where she came up, almost smiled. It was so beautiful. She's like, yeah, we are friends. And it gives heartfelt speech.
I don't exactly.
I think you just nailed that line right there. And you
But I didn't have the facial expression. But still one of my favorite characters. I mean, whether or not it's a challenge of acting, I have no idea. But
good character, yeah.
It's great. Yeah, she's one of my top characters.
Especially you don't see like a female in an autistic role very often, ever, pretty much. She's the only one.
Back to the satire stuff and the tech stuff. For me specifically, there has been a lot of stuff about, you know, the big four, Apple, Amazon, Facebook, and Google. As far as like investigative journalism that I've been reading lately, there was a big Time cover story around the time the Cambridge Analytica stuff was coming out. I read an article in Esquire arguing for their breakup, that they're all monopolies that are in desperate need of divestiture. And man, that was very much in my head this season during Silicon Valley. And this has always been the case, like going back to the season premiere or the series premiere of Silicon Valley. I think that bubble is finally getting popped where we're like society in general is like finally viewing these corporations as just as greedy and consuming and anti the individual's interest as any corporation. And when you see stuff like Gavin Belson and his journey to try and figure out where he can manufacture his box, reducing the number of Chinese worker suicides from 300 to zero, and he would like to get it closer to 80 as far as productivity versus worker depression, or Bangladesh figuring out collective bargaining or something, and him just cursing them.
Surprisingly adept.
Yes, the Inuit.
I think you have much too much knowledge of sociology that you're giving credit to the average person.
You're probably right.
I feel like the college educated person, we're going to go ahead and offend a large group of people here. I feel like the well-educated, or I'll say well-read person, because I'm college education, be well-read. The well-read, well-informed person is, we're all coming around to these corporations are terrible, much like they did generations ago with the coal companies.
I wouldn't even go so far as terrible.
Just amoral. They're not good.
Sorry, that's a better. That's a word.
But I disagree. I mean, there's like, isn't that what Paul Ryan stands for? And a lot of educated and informed people vote for that guy.
Yeah, I mean, like, in what sense?
Follow the corporate. We shouldn't be stifling corporations. They're going to do what's right in the end. It's going to help everybody.
I think there used to be, Teddy Roosevelt is known as a trust buster who broke up monopolies. And he was a different kind of Republican. But if Republicans like to claim Lincoln, then they have to claim Teddy Roosevelt as well. And any impulses they have to break up monopolies now are completely gone by the wayside. And just like the just sheer numbers that Apple can have $100 billion just sitting off seas. And it doesn't do anything. It just sits in a bank account, and they're just holding the U.S. hostage, waiting for them to drop down tax rates, for them to bring it back into the country so they can buy shares back and maybe increase their dividend. Or that Apple, who sells their products not to the less educated, but to the highly educated. Apple, whose consumers make on average more money than consumers of something like whatever Google's equivalent of a phone is, or whatever some other company, the expression to consumer, for example, that those consumers who are supposedly exposed to critical thinking through their education can understand that Apple slows down processing speeds or whatever kind of speed for older versions to entice consumers to buy new versions of the same fucking product.
I'm going to stop you right there. The percent of the population that knows that is less than one, way less than one.
You're probably correct.
Yeah, I'm absolutely.
And I really don't think it has anything to do with education level when it comes to that.
No, I think it's skepticism and critical thinking.
Yes.
Facebook, if they're going to generate insane, obscene profit margins, and if all of their income is going to come from marketing, and if marketing is pretty much only about overwhelming someone's critical faculties to get them to buy something out of a need that same company selling something has to create.
It seems insane.
It's a failure of critical thinking.
It seems insane to me that people are on Facebook doing those quizzes, clicking the button that said they're going to take your information about your friends, family, blah, blah, blah. Is that okay? And people fucking click yes and didn't expect it.
Yeah.
I clicked yes because I needed to know what Hogwarts house I would be in. And I was fine with selling
It's just some random number generator behind all that, 1 through 4, and it just,
well, the worst
whatever
part,
you put in.
They even give me a real a Hogwarts one. It was like some cheap ripoff.
Slither Rhyme.
Yeah, Slither Rhyme, yeah.
There is, if we want to take this back to what I can relate to, it's there's not enough education in the K through 12 system about these things. Like, the people using Facebook now were never told in any explicit way to, like, critically read what's on the computer. We were just brought up to always click allow. Like, I have a rule in my class. Whenever something shows up, you always click no. You always click block. You never hit save. And, yeah, like, and those kids don't know that, though. I'm the first person to tell them that, and they're 13 to 14 years old.
Yeah, because they've just been clicking around on iPads since they've been 7.
Right.
And we talk about everything.
We talk about Facebook and Google as a company, and I ask them, how does Facebook make money? How does Google make money? And they come up with all these obscene ideas, but no one says, oh, they're selling your information and advertisements.
Yeah. I guess we come from that era still where people were distrustful of buying something over the internet. Can you imagine explaining that to a 13-year-old? There were people terrified to buy something over the internet. What do you mean?
I mean, my parents are not comfortable with their credit card information online. And I think MMC member Tom Topper will not use Venmo or PayPal for that exact same reason, which makes it very difficult to collect from him.
That's because Tom's illiterate, unfortunately. But his wife sits here and reads all the posts to him.
He's the best illiterate doctor there's ever been.
I think Og would have something to say about that from 12,000 BC, because only three of his patients lived, and that was a pretty good rate for that period of time.
I thought you were going to, like, an actual real person for a second there.
Yes, Og. Feasibility of the things that they're talking about on the show, Ryan, because that is far past the point where my knowledge of technology and what the show is talking about part ways. So
I understand most of it until the initial coin offering. I mean, I understand. I know how an initial coin starts and everything like that, but I didn't know that was an actual fundraising method that people are using now instead of VCs.
I mean, if you stick around to watch John Oliver after Silicon Valley, he very recently had an episode about blockchains and all that kind of stuff. And it's bubble behavior by the people that are most into it. No question. As far as, like, the decentralized internet that Pied Piper is pushing.
Like, do you want me to see? How much my Ethereum coin is worth right now?
You have a single Ethereum coin?
I have much less than a single Ethereum coin.
Okay.
I feel like everything in this is theoretically possible, but no one has the tech to do what they're talking about.
And doesn't Amazon make most of their money from server farms? Is that correct, Brian? I'm very much treating you as an expert.
I don't know where they make their money from, but AWS, Amazon Web Services, hosts most of the internet at this point. Well, not most of the internet. They make, I can't even explain how much is hosted on there. I'm assuming that Weebly uses Amazon Web Services, which is where Movie Club is hosted.
Sure. And that would all go away if something like Pied Piper was real.
Not necessarily. Think about, they've only got like 8 or 9 apps. They didn't show us how it had grown, like what has gone there, or how they're going to make any money.
I treat this like I treated the science in my patent law about final. There was all about polymers, and I treat all this stuff about like I did like polymers.
You know what a polymer is?
Polymers, no, like, fucking idea.
A polymer is two of something.
Yeah,
that's a polymer.
Cool. No fucking idea. Yeah. But I explained the law around it and got to be happy with that.
A chain, like, the law around is a polymer of links.
Great,
that's,
man.
What a polymer.
That's great. Good for you. Do you want me to explain the patent?
I do not.
Good, because I forgot all of it.
Okay.
It was a semester I had a child. It was stupid. Who has a kid in the middle of law school? God damn it. Why have kids anyway?
This is a great question that I've been asking for the last 20 months. For no reason whatsoever. Last thing on Silicon Valley, I do think it is an improvement on the previous season. I liked the shorter episode order. I think Silicon Valley often has a problem with, like, plastic go nowhere and just time wasting. I mean, and that's just Mike Judge's, like, background. If you make 14 seasons of King of the Hill, you're going to figure out pretty well how to maintain the status quo at the end of the episode.
I thought it was always the point of King of the Hill.
Absolutely, but it's the point of all sitcoms.
Okay.
But I did like the amount of forward momentum. Richard didn't bug the shit out of me like he did last year. There was good stuff for Guilfoyle. There was good stuff for Dinesh. Less Jared than I would have liked, but it's all the same. Nice detour with the AI stuff, which we didn't really talk about, but I don't know. I don't know enough about that kind of thing to really opine.
Jared falling in love with a bot.
Yeah, sure. Great. That was fine.
Perfect.
But Jared fucks, so it doesn't seem like he should have a problem with like connecting with an individual.
Yeah. So overall, I think I actually like last season better. But I know I was higher on last season than you were.
Mm-hmm.
But I keep going back and forth, like on this last episode especially. I love kind of the goofy shit they did with the beards. After like 2 months, mm-hmm. everyone had a ridiculous beard. Then it was never mentioned again. I love shit like that. Next day, they're all shaved. and even the Tesla stuff or their faces are going ridiculous, which wouldn't happen because they're in a closed environment. Come on, guys. There's no
that, way. I thought that was dumb.
I did, and then I was like, yeah, you know, the more I thought about it, I was like, it's fine. Like, this is a goofy show.
To return to our topic of marketing, I love that Tesla is just so aggressively portrayed in the show as treating its consumers as complete and utter fucking morons.
I think as I'm flipping through, like, some episode recaps, I think I forgot about it, but my favorite part for the CEO, remind me of his name.
Belson?
No, the CEO, the main CEO.
Richard?
Richard, yes, Richard.
Oh, my God, Brian.
In episode one, when he buys the asinine amount of pizza to bankrupt the other company.
Yeah.
Like, that's perfect because, like, there's so many companies that are running on this idea of infinite debt. He just, like, he knows they're losing money, so he buys, it says, $19,000 worth of pizza.
It is. It's like Walt. In the basement laughing maniacally after all the money's gone.
Shane's been watching Breaking Bad again.
Yeah. I don't know. I like some of I didn't care for Dinesh's whole storyline this year. It was a bit too desperate. There's like he's the only one that there's like no growth for at all. He's
really turning into Ehrlich in a way.
Because his paranoia ICO thing.
You're thinking about Guilfoyle.
Yeah, you're talking about the Tesla.
Dinesh and Guilfoyle would be deeply, deeply offended that you confused which was which.
The Tesla thing was dumb to me. I didn't really enjoy any of it.
I didn't enjoy the whole most of the Tesla stuff with him. I liked everyone played him, but like he's got to figure something out of it. He's the only one who's not grown or not done anything interesting on the show. It's like it makes me question how is he so competent.
He's probably the least productive of those main four.
Like even like Monica, it was great seeing Guilfoyle and Monica at the end there together. Everyone seems to grow a little bit and contribute except for Dinesh.
Yeah, and like even Richard, I think he got a lot better as a CEO this year. He certainly fucks up a lot, but at least he's getting better at like finding the right people for stuff. In that. He makes Jared the CEO and he brings in Monica. And like the show very much plays both of those instances like big epiphanies for him, which I think are earned after 5 seasons of the scraping by the skin of his teeth.
I've got a top 5 plot point that we've missed.
Yeah.
The Box 3 logo and the cluelessness of ultra rich people.
It's so fantastic.
I don't remember how that started. I just remember it started
Box 3, and they had like people within the company design signatures and then vote on their favorite, and they voted on the pick, and then Belson was just like, yeah, let's go with it, because he just doesn't get it. And I think that's perfect for ultra rich people.
I love the Indian, assume he's an Indian,
Or at least sir. Pretending to be one.
Sure. Guide.
Guru.
Guru.
Dinpak. Dinpak is his name.
Dinpak.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. He goes to selling real estate.
Yes, but in a centered, holy, in a centered, holistic
right.
way.
Right.
Fuck that guy. So anything else on Silicon Valley before we perhaps return to recapping episodes next year? Who knows?
I got nothing, I feel like.
Yeah, strong season.
I'm sure there's a lot more to cover, but yeah.
It'll potentially be on my top 20 list 8 months from now, give or take. Stay tuned at the MMC Side Pieces tab. I know everyone. culture-wide is waiting with bated breath to see my hot picks.
That sounded weird.
Yeah.
Might get cut.
Stay away from my children.
I you should probably spell picks when you say that.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I understand. I see where the confusion could arise.
Poor verb choice.
Just fucking right. George Costanza boudoir picks. Not those. Although those come out. Those come out in February. The top 20 movies and TV come out in January. All right. Thank you for joining us tonight. Thanks, Brian.
Yeah.
So Barry is the new Bill Hader starring series on HBO following Silicon Valley. It is about a Midwestern hitman returned from fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan, or maybe one or the other. I don't know. I may have missed that detail. And he falls in with a pretty despicable family friend slash uncle, I want to say, who talks him into being a hitman for various interests. And we catch up to him at a particularly low point in his career and his mental health. And he rejuvenates himself while tailing his latest target, who is also an aspiring actor. And Barry becomes very interested in acting classes, less interested in being a hitman, and him trying to maintain his double life is the focus of the series. It's... Despite the seriousness of what that premise sounds like, it is a comedy, at least through 6 of its 8 episodes. We'll get to that inflection point. I think a lot of the comedy isn't generated from Bill Hader so much, beyond like his deadpan, just general straight man reacting to the various craziness around him, but from the most... And he's really despicable himself as his Uncle Fuchs, played by Stephen Root. But most of the comedy comes from the despicable people in the cast, specifically like the crime bosses that Barry falls in with, the Chechens, played by the actor who played the Yellow King on True Detective. And he was a character in Boardwalk Empire.
I didn't realize he's a Yellow King.
Yes, he's making right. flowers grow.
So,
also NoHo Hank, who's played by an actor I do not recognize.
Yeah, Andrew Kerrigan.
Okay, he's a fantastic yes. breakout character yes. of the show.
I was listening to, I think it was one of the, no, it was Bill Simmons' podcast. They were talking about Hader doing this role and some of the other SNL alum. And why they don't have their own TV shows like Kate McKinnon. It's because they probably can't play a straight character like Hader is.
Right? I think that's reasonable. I think he has a face for being the straight man, despite his SNL work as like crazy. And I'm not a regular SNL watcher, but like characters like Stefan and I don't know, other characters that he's played. I know Bill Hader best from probably Documentary Now, in which he plays many different characters. That's a spoof show of documentaries. And if you watch a lot of documentaries like I do, it is truly, truly a great show, just because you recognize all of these tropes that they're making fun of on the show. And we've seen Bill Hader in serious roles. We reviewed The Skeleton Twins as a club. I think this is, for Bill Hader, I think this is his most serious role. By far, like the Skeleton Twins had an extended sequence of him doing nitrous gags with Kristen Wiig, also from SNL. Whereas Barry, he doesn't make jokes. He doesn't do any physical humor. He, at his most comedic, is simply reacting, or he's like being a bad actor, and you laugh at how terrible he is. Somehow this show still works as a comedy, despite its serious, very serious subject matter.
Well, speaking of serious, it just does a great job at mocking the seriousness that people take everyday things. They take hobbies, they take their careers, And you're talking about someone who deals with life and death for a living.
Yeah, because it doesn't get more serious than what he deals in.
And then he's going to acting class, and everyone's like taking it very seriously. Right, that's it. That is the most important thing. It's in reality, it's just a club. It's a drinking club.
Yeah, it's hard for me to reconcile the generators of comedy in Barry. Like, there is the acting class, plenty of jokes there, between Harry Winkler as the acting coach and his various classmates, all in various degrees of cluelessness. There's plenty of humor to be mined there, no question. The other half of the humor with the Chechen mafia group and the Costa and the Bolivian to a different or to a lesser respect, that is odd. It just doesn't match. It doesn't match with what Barry is specifically going through. That NoHo Hank can get a laugh from every word that comes out of his mouth and every raise of his, not eyebrows because he doesn't have them, but with every crease in his forehead, that is a singularly comedic performance. But they are dealing with the side of Barry that is raw and brutal, and the source of real pathos and almost evil in the show. So I don't know. We talked about this briefly last night during the season finale, where maybe the Chechens are allowed to be comedic because they don't have Barry's internal struggle. They know exactly who they are. They are murderers. They are torturers. They are brutal and evil people. Whereas Barry isn't allowed to make jokes because he is so internally conflicted. He doesn't know who he is.
I'm a little disappointed that with the multiple times I've done Eastern European accents, that HBO never sought me out. Obviously, I know some of the bigwigs out there listening, I know that.
I think that if you auditioned as one of the Chechens on the show, you might have found yourself in a chair about to be tortured by a very strange and mentally damaged Chechen man.
Or his brother.
And it may or may not have been fake.
Yeah,
like it may or may not have been this crazy Chechen's audition.
You think HBO is going to have me murdered because of my accent? It's too good.
Yes,
they have to cover it up.
That's a long way around.
Because as a white Christian male, cis,
let's see where you're going with this.
I am being denied jobs.
I don't think anyone
oppressed.
I don't think anyone includes the Russians or the Chechens by extension in those considerations.
I'm just saying I'm being oppressed. I'm doing a great job with that, and they're hiring these other guys. So, HBO.
If you're talking about appropriation of the Chechen culture, I don't really.
I'm just talking about how oppressed I am. I feel very oppressed right now. They didn't give me a shot.
Get a job.
Because listen to this.
Not have gotten.
Listen to this.
Damn it.
You ready? What shit? Congrats, Johns, on buying new house. So proud of you.
It's terrible. It's terrible, and I want to build stocks and put you into them.
And make me watch, because part of that's the torture.
Part of that is the torture. Just as you were torturing my earballs with your horrible accent, turnaround is fair play there.
It's actually while I'm on this topic. Speaking of long-running gags we have in this podcast.
Sure.
I taught Jeff how to make a bindle with his lovies. So, because he's like, Daddy, I can't carry all these cars upstairs. I was like, watch this, son.
You know who solved this problem? The homeless.
Yes. Yes. Watch this. Put it all on your lovie. Wrap your lovie up and carry it over your shoulder. Boom. Done. I'm like, and I'm like, this is called a bindle. He's like, bindle, okay. And the next night he's like, Dad, can we make another bindle? I was like, yeah.
You betcha.
Yeah.
It's important to learn life skills at a young age. Eventually, Jeff will be taught the various signs that are carved in defense posts that tell hobos which family is generous and which is murdering them and stashing them in the basement. And after that, I don't know.
That's it. Is he good to go? I've raised a man.
How fast can he run onto a train with a freight car door open?
Kid loves trains,
How quickly can he fashion the end of his bindle into a pointed stick to stave off other bindle-carrying hobos? These are all valuable skills for a future patron of the new economy. I've lost my... Oh, yes.
Train of thought, because we're talking about bindles.
Blammo.
Thank you.
So, Barry is often as serious as the MMC is frivolous. And at a certain point, the show turned into Breaking Bad, a show that also occasionally had bursts of humor, but was first and foremost a life-shortening, heart blood pressure-raising, endurance test in how much the viewer could stomach. The last two episodes of Barry very much turned into exactly that when... like the fiction of Barry's life, that he only kills bad people. He's forced to reckon with that, and then he's forced to reckon with it again, to much less upset in the finale when he presumably kills, so we didn't actually see the body, but I don't understand. I don't see how you could take that scene any other way.
If they come back and Moss is alive, that's...
I guess she could be tied up somewhere.
That's cheap.
It is a show with NoHo Hank in it, so I don't have a problem with Barry. I think Barry is an excellent, excellent show. I think if it didn't have another season, I would think highly of it more than I do now. It's hard to imagine where they go from here.
Right, it's gonna be a challenge. But like I said, if Moss is coming back, that's bad. You can't bring her back. She's done. Which is a shame.
It's one thing for Barry to kill a character who made a choice to be in a car that he should not have been in. It's another thing for Barry to kill some... Maybe it isn't. Maybe it's all the fucking same, and I should just think more like Moss and that he's a fucking murderer and she's a fucking cop.
I think it's interesting
Maybe it's a question of, like, how great her character is versus the character of Chris, who is, you know, I think a full character, but just not as much. I think he's a fairly stock guy in over his head. He didn't necessarily... I thought the actor portraying him did a great job, especially in his last couple scenes, but he's not specific to the show in the way that the policewoman is.
I think it's interesting we go over all this the same time we watch Iron Giant, because it's who you choose who you are, right, is a big thing of that.
Mm-hmm.
And Barry's saying this entire time, I am not this, but he continues to choose to be that.
I mean, another way to look at it is that he's actively choosing to be an actor, and the world that he has spent time in is not allowing him to be anything different.
He made a choice long ago
to be a hitman.
Right.
And that's not a choice that is so easily moved away from.
By the end of the season, I mean, it starts off that way where you're like, oh, I feel bad for this guy. But by the last two episodes, like, he's made some choices. He could have been gone.
Yeah.
He could have been gone episode one. Like, he could have gone and taken acting classes anywhere.
Yeah, probably... And, like, this is a trick that I think the show is very skillfully played on the viewer, in that we really take Barry's word for it from the beginning that he's only killing bad people.
Yes.
He may very well think that, but I don't think there's any reason after this season has run its paces that Fuchs only took money from reputable people who were avenging something bad that happened to them or their families, or a bad person contracting Barry to kill another bad person, whatever that means.
Yeah, like, I think the earliest tip off we have on, you know, Barry being full of shit on that is when he kills the Bolivian, and the guy's got kids, and he's got the kids, like, playground equipment in the background. It's never mentioned, which I love the fact that it's like,
I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, so he's strangling this guy, and there's, like, kid slides in the background. So it's like, that's someone's dad. You know, like, this isn't again, just that, like...
It's also someone's dad who made a decision.
Right.
To
right.
work.
So,
it's just...
So it's not just like... I'm just saying that, like, it's not just like simple, like, maybe this Bolivian guy is a murderer, or maybe he's just a drug dealer. Who gives a shit? He deserves to die because he's a drug dealer.
Certainly not, but I think...
So it's not like Barry has the high... I mean, who's at the moral high ground there?
I think that's the issue, is that he likes to think that he does. When he does not, he isn't an impartial actor. He is making choices.
He chooses to be.
Yes. Yes.
And as viewers, we should have caught on that. Reading through some of the AV Club comments, where people are like, "Yeah, I think he's still redeemable. I think he's still redeemable." I'm like, how? How do you think he's still redeemable?
I mean, you want to think that people. We've gone through this so many times with antiheroes, and. It's not that I don't think you can continue to make shows about violent men who think that they're justified in what they're doing or have willful blinders on about the ramifications of their actions. Like, that's the trope that started the Golden Age of television, and it has sustained itself all the way through 18 years, 19 years. And I kind of think we're moving away from it a little bit. I don't know exactly... I mean, Alec Berg and Bill Hader are talented people. Alec Berg, who makes Silicon Valley currently and also was heavily involved in Seinfeld and is like an old hand at TV comedy. I don't know what they might have to say about this specific trope that someone like Vince Gilligan with Breaking Bad had to say, or David Chase with The Sopranos had to say, or Matthew Weiner with Mad Men had to say. If this was just an 8-episode run, and it was over, this would be a very strong example of that. If it even wants to say anything unique about that, or if it's just going to rehash Tony Soprano all over again. I don't know. Yeah.
I'll watch.
Yeah, so will I. I certainly don't think it'll be bad. But you know, I'm very high on it now, again.
Someone described it as an A-minus show the other day. Those reading or listening, I think
that's reasonable.
I think that's pretty accurate.
I'm pretty behind on new TV this year, but it's hard to imagine it not making my top 10 in the aforementioned hot picks.
I snapped two of those hot picks while you were moving out the other day. You were just muscly with your shirt off.
That was sounds like someone else.
Grabbing your dresser.
I think you should talk to Blair because no one's ever described me as muscly. That's pretty much all I got on Barry. Really well done. Funny. Somehow it can go extremely silly and extremely serious, often in the same episode, sometimes in the same scene. As far as what it has to say about acting or anything like that, I think it treats the acting class pretty reasonably as people that are not going to realize their dreams necessarily, but have a fairly good handle on like the craft of acting they're doing what they're doing. And I think it treats acting training pretty seriously. Like, I think it finds what is valuable psychologically and that kind of thing, while treating these individuals with some amount of contempt, which I think is the right balance.
They're really the only one they treat with contempt is, now I can't think of her name.
The female lead?
Yeah.
I just think she's fairly oblivious. And they self-diagnose as being in a bubble.
Yeah, I think she is probably, for many episodes, until you really see what Barry is, the one of the least likable characters.
Well, I think...
Right?
I think she is, from what we've seen, the best in the group. And within her very, very small pond, I think she absolutely knows that and is acting like the most talented person in a group. And I think that's all there is to it.
Yeah, I mean...
I don't feel negatively about her.
I do.
That's fair.
I have negative feelings.
All right.
And I can't think of the actress's name who plays that character. I can't think of the character's name right now, but... The actress who plays her is fantastic in going from playing this person who is self-centered, egotistical, alpha dog type.
All of these just sound like the traits of anybody who thinks they're going to make it.
Right, which, and maybe you need to have those traits.
I think 100% you do. I think it's a fundamentally delusional dream.
Just think,
you have to be a little, like, everybody was a little delusional at one point. Like, Chris Pine was an extra on a movie set, and that's where his career started.
He did a great job with, like, the just being so overly confident. But then to see her go on stage and, you know, quote unquote, the stage in the show and act poorly, it's like something we talk about all the time. Actors who know how to act like bad actors is got to be really hard, yeah, right?
Yes.
And she nails it just like so subtly, just.
Yes. Even Henry Winkler, like, we see him briefly in the season as a working actor. Like, he's going in for like one line parts, just like his students are. And we see why he's doing that, because he doesn't read that part very well. So none of the actors are good actors necessarily, but like, Gene's not a good teacher.
Right.
So the best acting we see in the series is arguably Barry right after he killed a guy that he had no business killing. So,
That scene win Bill Hader an Emmy?
I don't know if the show. Well, I mean, comedy actor, I think, is a pretty sparse category. So maybe. He's got the name recognition that I think Emmy voters like. On the other hand, Donald Glover released a second season of Atlanta this year. So.
And they already gave him one, though, so they don't. I don't know.
Oh, Julia Louis-Dreyfus has one for every season this year.
Sure.
So they have no problem doing repeat.
Would it surprise you if Hader won?
It would not.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, he's very good in the show. The Lieutenant Moss, is very good.
She's fantastic. If she won Best Supporting Actress, so
that seems less likely because I don't have any idea what her name is. I've never seen her in anything.
That'd be
cool.
She was great. I think she was one of the funniest characters and most impressive characters the entire season.
Yeah, and it doesn't hurt to have HBO behind you. My understanding of the way Emmy votes work is that HBO is a very powerful entity that kind of votes as an entire block. They changed the rules recently. Right around the time Veep started winning for Best Comedy and Game of Thrones started winning for Best Drama. One of those is better than the other.
So should this be nominated as a comedy or a drama to you?
I don't know. I think it's a drama that just happens to have jokes in it. Like the best dramas do. Like The Sopranos was a very funny show. Mad Men was a very funny show. But it was, I don't think anyone would disagree that it was a drama.
I agree with you. Like, I think this is more of a drama. Like, everyone says it's a dark comedy. I don't think it's necessarily a dark comedy. Like,
I don't think a half hour drama exists on the TV landscape. But that's awards talk. Do you have anything else on Barry before we wrap this episode of this single episode of Barry'em Valley up?
I don't.
Okay, it's a great show. Silicon Valley was very good this year.
Who'd you have higher ranked this?
I preferred Barry.
I think I have Barry this year as well.
Yeah.
It's tough for me to say because I love Silicon Valley.
I talk shit about the tortured man who doesn't want to be violent but can't help being violent trope. While it is something that's been done over and over and over again by very, very intelligent and smart and capable and creative people, there's a reason that people
this
keep returning
just,
to it because it works really well.
It was just a little different. It was different enough from what everyone else has done with this. I think it did well.
I don't know how different it is, but just like the bald face, comedy of it.
The
characters. That's a different flavor.
So.
Yeah, great show. HBO doing good work. If Westworld cannot spark my interest in any way, the HBO comedies are as strong as ever. So that'll do us for this episode of the Munich Movie Club podcast. Check us out on the internet at munichmovie.club. Like us on Facebook at Munich Movie Club. Follow us on Twitter, Munich Movie Club. Click on our Amazon link and shop as normally. That helps us out. The Amazon link on our website and shop as normally. That helps us out. iTunes reviews help us reach more people. stay tuned to our feed. We'll be recording next week with a discussion of our latest trio of movies, The Disaster Artist, Mudbound, and The Iron Giant. Those increase in quality, and I think each and every one is conducive to an excellent discussion, so that's something to look forward to. And thank you for joining me tonight, Shane.
Thanks, John.
Have a good night.